Letters from a Glass House is a not-for-profit ministry of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Venice, Florida. Support us today at uucov.org.
I want you to tune your minds to a year way back, 1313 BCE. Long, long time ago. It was a bad year for the people of Egypt. Their Israeli slaves were tired. They were openly angry after decades, generations of involuntary captivity. Now, the Egyptians considered themselves to be much more sophisticated than the Israelites, much more cosmopolitan, if you were thinking about it that way. They said, our gods are normal gods. Think about all the Egyptian gods and goddesses you learned about in school. Their gods were normal. They were relatable. They wore jewelry and they had feasts. And they had wild times with women and men and alcohol. They were relatable gods. But this Israeli God, this Yahweh, well, he didn't live with the rest of the gods. No, he was a weirdo in their opinion. He lived way off on some mountain somewhere. And he threw thunder. He threw devouring fire. He blew stuff up. They didn't understand this God. But the word around Egypt was that the Hebrew God was mad. And according to the Hebrew Bible, their God sent a series of plagues to Egypt, killing all of the firstborn Egyptian male children and passing over the slave children. Now, for those of you who are of a more scientific bent, I might suggest to you that year in Egypt, they had a red algae bloom. Fish died. Locust showed up. Frogs came to eat the dead fish, eat the locust. And who got the best food? Well, the firstborn of an Egyptian household. So who got to eat the tainted food from the dead fish? From the dead locust, from the grain that got ruined. Who got to eat the most of it? Well, those firstborn male children. And who died? Well, they did. So we're talking about this historically today. But that was enough for the Israelites because they believed their God had done this. And they said, we've had enough. We're tired of slavery. We trust our leaders, Moses and Aaron. We have faith in our God. And so they left. They fled. And Passover is the 8-day festival celebrating that flight to freedom. Passover is like an onion. There are layers within layers of story, layers of meaning. The one at the smallest level being a personal story, and the biggest level is the story of all of us as human beings. Now, Passover is a Jewish holiday, but that's kind of the middle layer. The whole is something much bigger. Why is this night different from all other nights? What makes it so special? That's a question that children ask on Passover. Why do we retell the story of Moses and the Hebrew people? And why do some people tell it as if they were there? As if it happened to them and their best friends, like they drove out of Egypt last week in a Honda Accord with an iPhone in one hand. Why keep telling this story from 1313 BCE? Passover has been celebrated by all kinds of people. Groups that fight against oppression and injustice during the civil rights movement. Jewish and black and white and Native American people had seders together. A seder can be meaningful for anyone who has been oppressed or persecuted or who works to destroy inequality. There's a multi-faith Haggadah, which I have used a Passover ritual book. And for those of you coming to our Seder, you will see one that we will be using. And it says this: oppression doesn't always mean slavery or punishment. Sometimes it means discrimination against someone because of a person's race or religion or age, whether they rent or own a home, the people they choose to live with and love. The land, air, and water can become polluted. That's a kind of environmental persecution. Sometimes oppression means other people don't seem to care about problems that hurt people, like AIDS or child abuse. We can say these problems are our pharaohs. Sometimes pharaohs are outside of us, sometimes they're inside of us. Being addicted, feeling depressed, having bad habits, that can feel like we have a pharaoh. To break the chains of our own slavery, we have to admit that we're in chains. Now, in telling the Passover story, it's traditional to refer to Egypt of a Mitzrayim as a Mitzrayim, which means a narrow place. So the children of Israel went down to a narrow place and then were freed and able to move forwards and lift themselves up. So the innermost level of Passover is about us as individual people. We celebrate the story, we celebrate the holiday, because we were and we are in bondage, all of us in our own ways. How many times have you wanted to make a change, to try to do something new, and you stopped yourself because it was too risky, because you might lose what you had, because you were too afraid? That's a pharaoh, that's a narrow place, that's your bondage. Rabbi Nahum of Chernobyl, who was a Hasidic rabbi, says this: once there was a man who had very little. He struggled and worked and studied every day of his life, and his hard work paid off. He was able to build a home at long last with big gates against the robbers, and he had servants to carry out his business in town. When it was finished, he moved his workbench and his bed to the rooftops where he could enjoy the breeze. And one day he looked down. He looked down from the rooftop, and way below in the dirt, he thought he saw a glimmer. But he said to himself, if I should open the gates while the servants are away, thieves might take what I have. It's nothing but the sun. And so he turned away and went back to bed. And when the servants returned, they didn't see the glimmer, and they trampled the place where it had been, and the large and perfect and precious stone which he had seen was pushed into the mud, never to be found again. When a person is standing on a roof and a precious stone lies in the ground, they are not able to take it unless they go down to where it is. Sometimes you have to risk. Sometimes you have to walk away. Sometimes you have to step down or fall down so you can go forward. And I want you to think about this a minute. The Hebrew people were not that different than we are today, than you are today. Do you really think that every one of them, you hear the story and it's all clean and nice. Oh yeah, we told them we're going to leave. Moses got them, they left. It was not that nice. Not everybody would have wanted to leave. Think about it. Some of those Israeli people had money. They had house servants of their own. Some of them had just gotten married, just bought a new home, just got a new flock of goats. Some of them had just learned to play a musical instrument and gotten hired by a wealthy Egyptian family. Some of them had it pretty good. Some of them loved Egypt. No one had them chained. There weren't guards on their homes. At any time, any one of those families could have pretty much just walked away into the desert. Why didn't they do it? Because leaving might be worse. They stayed until Pharaoh said, go, and someone led. We're held captive by a lot of things. destructive jobs, hobbies that are no longer enjoyable, relationships, religious beliefs, expectations about the behaviors of others, our own possessions, privilege or lack of it, race and class. We all have our Egypt and our Pharaoh. And life can send us plagues or part the sea, but if you refuse to move through the narrow place, to walk away from your Egypt, you'll still be standing there when the waves come rolling back in. No God is going to drag you. No spirit of life is going to provide you with a horsey and push you up on it. The inner level of Passover is the celebration of your own power to walk away from slavery in your own life. It's a celebration of your own agency. The next level of Passover is the story of oppression and action in the world. The story of every group, every people, every minority held in fear and violence. It's the story of every them and they and those people that have been othered and demonized and who cry out to be free. The Jews in Egypt, the Palestinians in Israel, American black men dying in the streets, transgender people, poor people, indigenous people, asylum-seeking immigrants, prisoners in America in for-profit prisons. This level is a reminder that some stories are larger than our own, and we're called to hear them in their own words, just as we hear the story of Moses. It's not for us to decide what the story is, but to honor it. And this level of Passover, it's a reminder that we're here to give voice to the voiceless, to stand with the powerless and the oppressed, to make it possible for them to speak, not to speak for them. Read the story in the Hebrew Testament. Hear the words of captivity and plague and the Exodus. And then listen to your own life. Listen to similar stories of captivity and the quest for freedom. Because they're happening right now. There are people who are being held in slavery here in America. According to Madison Pauley, writing for Mother Jones magazine, in the early 1980s, Corrections Corporation of America pioneered the idea of the for-profit prison. You just sell it like you were selling cars or real estate or hamburgers, one of its founders told Inc. magazine. Except it's not hamburgers, it's slave labor. Today, corporate-run prisons hold 8.5% of America's inmates. Pauley writes, as it did during at least the previous 5 years, CCA's annual report in 2014 flagged criminal justice reform, including drug decriminalization and the reduction of mandatory minimum sentences, as a risk factor for its business. Chris Epps, Mississippi's prison commissioner and the president of the American Correctional Association, was charged with taking kickbacks from a private prison contractor. Now, our readings this morning were really clear. Our law allows slavery. It allows slavery in the prisons. But the for-profit prison model needs prisoners to make money off of. And if there's not enough, they aren't profitable. They need people to be sentenced to prison. They need people they can pay 12 cents an hour. These are some pretty uncomfortable statistics. Private prisons in the U.S. incarcerated 128,000 plus people in 2016. Since the year 2000, the number of people housed in private prisons has increased not one, not two, not five, but 47%. 19 of the states with private prison contracts incarcerate more than 500 people in for-profit prisons. Texas incarcerated the largest number, 13,692 people. Now, the average normal rise in prison population has been 9%. The number of people in private prisons, again, 47%. The for-profit prisons don't want a democracy. They don't want equitably applied laws. They don't want prisoner advocates and reasonable sentencing guidelines. Because every prisoner that gets out is an asset they can't sell. They're selling the work of people. People are the commodity. Every person on the street, including you, your children, your grandchildren, is a potential item to be sold by one of these prisons. So I want you to go back and think about that exodus, that flight from chains. Celebrate the stories that aren't your own, but that give you a large picture of the world you live in. Because that's that last level of Passover, the story of us all. The outermost skin of the onion, the shape that holds the rest. Passover reminds us that we're all human, all held in one web. We eat the bitter, we drink the sweet. We all love the joy of gifts and fear the loss of things we care about. We together are held by the same human frailties, one family of all life. Passover reminds you that you're not alone in your joy or your sorrow. And it reminds us that if other people aren't free, then you too remain at that narrow place. Each layer is shaped and distorted by the layers below it. As long as they're slaves, we're not free. As long as human beings can be bought and sold, we are in captivity. So grant yourself this. Come down from the roof, take up the precious stone, squeeze through the narrow place. Fight for your freedom. Fight for the freedom of every person held in slavery. The sea is split. Walk through while the water is rolled back. Take everyone with you. Leave no one behind. And I won't say amen because we are not finished. The work of justice is ours, and we have to engage in it over and over and over. And so rather than amen, I will say the traditional words, next year in Jerusalem. Next year may this struggle end. Next year may we all be free. Next year, no matter who you are, may we be able to meet in peace in a place we love together. Next year in Jerusalem. Thank you.